Welcome back to Game Warp. I'm Kim, and joined with me as always is my co-host Elwood Jones. How's it going, Elwood?
It's going fine, Kim. You know, we're back in the swing of things now. We've got past, as I said, the holiday lazy is finally over. We're now finally getting back into our groove with all these games. And of course, there's so many games to say we've just started 2017. It seems we're already being bombarded with games, and it's not even the summer yet. So God knows what it's going to be like as we obviously get further into the year. And certainly looking at the release schedule for what's coming up in 2017, it seems to only grow by the day, with titles being added all the time. So I don't know where half these titles have been hiding, but I'm really excited to see new titles obviously coming out. And obviously it's really exciting the fact we're speaking with a new developer today as well.
Yeah, today's guest is from East Shade Studios. East Shade Studios is an American independent game studio who is currently developing an upcoming open world exploration called East Shade. But before they actually announced that game, they decided to develop a short, what they call a one-sitting first-person exploration adventure game called Leaving Lindau, set in the East Shade universe. So before we talk any further about it, let's welcome our guest, Danny, to the show. Welcome, Danny. Hello. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing very well. Thank you.
So how did you get into game development?
I didn't go to college or anything for it. Out of high school, when I turned about 16, I think I already knew that I wanted to do environment art for video games. I had been doing a little bit of 3D stuff before that. And when I was about 16, I decided that I specifically wanted to do 3D art for video games. And so I had been reading up a lot about the best course of action to get in. And I was reading more and more that the degree wasn't so important. So I ended up going to a really small trade school in my area called Future Poly. And the instructors there were all in the industry, which was really helpful. My instructor at the time, he was working at ArenaNet, who makes Guild Wars, and he kind of threw a bone out to the class one day where they were looking for like a couple interns, and so he kind of unleashed this, what they call an art test on the class, which is basically where they give you a piece of concept art, and you try modeling it and making a game asset out of it, and whoever the folks who did the best ones were accepted into this internship program at ArenaNet. And at the time, that's like all I wanted to do. That's all I had going at the time. I wasn't even working a job or anything. I was just doing that full time, and worked really hard on it and ended up getting the internship. So that was my first gig at ArenaNet, and that was about 6 years ago. And then I worked in between at a couple other AAA studios. My last one was Sucker Punch on Infamous Second Son. And then I decided that I wanted to go indie and try making this East Shade. So, and I've been doing that for about 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's always really quite funny when I hear people obviously talk about choosing to just go directly into video game development. And I think it's just a sign of me being such an old man, because obviously when I was coming from school, no one thought about going into video game development. So for yourself to obviously say that you wanted to go into video game development and certainly environmental design, it's just such a change of the time, and the fact that we have kids now doing coding as a school modulus and stuff, it's always kind of amazing to see how far everything's come along. So with obviously working within AAA games, and what made you want to move from doing these AAA titles? As you mentioned earlier, you were working on Second Son, and now you're obviously moving into the indie market. I mean, what inspired you to make that sort of change?
Well, I think I think probably almost everyone in video games, AAA or otherwise, wants to make their own game. I mean, that's probably unsurprising. Everyone wants to do their own thing, and everyone has, you know, their own ideas for games, and I was always just really serious about that. I mean, especially after I had gotten into AAA, I was already thinking like, well, you know, one day I want to make my own game, so I need to start planning on how I'm going to go about doing that. And at the time, I always thought it was going to require a lot of money, because I figured, you know, if I wanted to make a game, then games are seldom made alone, so I'll probably have to hire a few people. And that's probably going to cost a lot of money. So I had always been saving. Like that was always my goal. I was just always saving. And then about 3 years ago, I was seeing, or even a little longer ago than that, I was seeing so many really cool, fairly large games coming out with really small teams, sometimes even just one person. And that really inspired me, like, wow, if other people are doing it, maybe I don't need as much money as I thought. Maybe I don't need to go and hire a bunch of people. And I had been saving as if I would, like, you know, 10 years down the road or something, I'd start a company and blow it all in a couple of years. And if I fail, then I would just go back and get a normal job like a normal person. But then I was thinking, well, maybe I can just do that now. And when the idea for Eastshade came to me, which was quite a different idea at the time than Eastshade turned out to be now, I was so impassioned that, like, every day I would go home on top of my day job and work on it until like 4 a.m. And that was pretty grueling. And I knew that I had to, you know, stop one and keep going with the other. And I just decided that I was gonna, you know, take a gamble and try my hand at going indie. So
yeah,
I left.
Well, I mean, certainly with Eastshade, it's again countering this idea of what people have when you say about independent gaming, because when you say independent gaming, everyone thinks that it's very simple, it's all very pixel art, and it's can't possibly compare to like a AAA title. But when we obviously look at the footage that we've seen for Eastshade, it's absolutely stunning to see this.
Well, thank you very much.
I mean, I wasn't expecting, I mean, it brought back to myself a lot of memories of games such as like Myst and Riven, that sort of setting, and just the environmental, how the environments are designed. I wasn't expecting that from an independent title. And I think this is the thing with the independent scene. It's constantly shifting our expectations of what we can expect. We're no longer, of this case where you, when you say independent, you expect these sort of like freeware, sort of like very basic sort of games. You can now mm-hmm. almost expect to see some like a properly developed game that is easily comparable to like a AAA game. And we've seen this certainly through the titles we've covered on the show already. So things such as like Life is Strange, I would easily say that's a AAA title, but it's obviously an independent one. So to again see what we've obviously seen in the footage for Eastshade, it's constantly changing that opinion. I mean, when you are obviously doing the independent game, do you feel that you have any sort of limitations put upon yourself, or do you just make the best game that you can with the resources you have?
I actually feel, and this might just be because I'm quite naive and arrogant in a way, I suppose. I mean, you kind of have to be to quit your very comfortable job and try to do this. But I don't really feel like I have that many limitations in terms of the gameplay mechanics. Like, there's not really any system I've dreamed up that I feel like would just be out of my reach. And part of that as well is I'm not particularly interested in making, like, you know, an MMO or anything like that. So it just so happens I'm lucky in that my deepest interests aren't anything that necessarily requires tons and tons of money. But on the production side, I mean, there are certain compromises I have to make. Like, for instance, Eastshade has NPCs, and for this kind of game, like the kind of higher fidelity, more realistic look, and first person and all that, most indies tend to try to come up with stuff that won't require actually having to render a character. The Firewatch team talked about that in a GDC talk, that they consciously made the decision to not have any faces in their stories because it's just so expensive and so difficult to do. And that's just something that's been a really hard struggle. Like, one decision I made early on was to, as part of the lore of the world, everyone covers their mouths, and that's just kind of part of their costume. But the reason why I did that is so that I wouldn't have to do any lip syncing if I ever decided to add voices. And even for the voices, there's not full, Eastshade is not fully voiced. Leaving Lindau isn't either. There's just like a short greeting line in gibberish. It's like, Akriyuha. It's like a little gibberish greeting line, and then the rest is reading. So yeah, there's things like that that you have to consider.
Yeah, you know, like game development, every time we talk to developers, seems, you know, to us, it seems like sometimes for many games, it would seem like indie games are a very simple concept. But when you think about all the little things, like, because we're not game developers, we don't really understand a lot of the little techniques that need to go through and what things are harder to achieve than others. And, you know, just you talking about this kind of gives it a little bit more perspective that, you know, it is, you know, I never listened to the Firewatch talk about that. So this is the first time I've heard of it. And it's an interesting thing. And the fact that you chose to tackle an open world exploration game seems like it seems like in itself is a challenging task, because it's, you know, open worlds are not platforms. You know, platforms is like, you know, it could be 2D or 3D and just like one way or whatever. But
yeah,
open world, you have so many more things to think about. And, you know, you have to actually like consider all the aspects of the whatever civilization you're building, the environment, where it's located. And there's just so many factors to it. And it makes me wonder, for the first game that you're making, did you ever think about that it's like a big challenge that you were going into this? Like it was very ambitious.
Oh yeah, all the time. And every article you read about, like, you know, how to get started in indie development is always like start small. And I would always read those and I'd be like, yes, everyone's gonna start small. Everyone's going to make these tiny games. And while they're making their tiny games, I'm going to quit my job and spend my entire life savings and try to make the biggest thing ever so that nobody can ignore it. That's just the arrogance that I had. But in terms of making an open world game, I mean, I think it's going well, but of course, we'll see. I may fail spectacularly. It could be a complete train wreck as far as bugs and things, but so far, it's going pretty well.
I mean, it's certainly just from the perspective of someone who's like kind of a graphic snob, it kind of makes it all the more appealing when you have a game that looks as nice as it does. And certainly, as you said, with the independent games, it's do something simple. And there's so many independent games out there and that are raved about, but they're very simple graphics, which makes you look like you're playing something like on an Amstrad or like a Commodore 64, and it's kind of like, yeah, I kind of never liked that before, so why do I want to be playing that now? It may have playability, but I find it very hard to get the hook, whereas obviously something that you're presenting, like I said, it's very visually based. And again, if just looking at other examples on the independent scene, like our number one featured game of last year, Oxenfree, that had a very sort of pastel, very comic book sort of style to it. And again, that was an independent game, and I never understood the reason why you should limit yourself graphically with the independent game. So it's always nice to see independent publishers obviously wanting to go out there and push themselves when it comes to the graphics side of things. And at the same time, I do understand, obviously, you've got a smaller team, so the bigger the scale you have, obviously, the more problems you can encounter. And I mean, has there been any of those sort of big issues that have sort of presented themselves as you've gone along with the development thing, or has it sort of been a sort of very sort of smooth sort of transition really into this independent market?
Well, for the game I'm making, the art production, particularly the environments, is kind of the biggest chunk of all the stuff I have to do. And actually, in response to what you're saying about, you know, indie games, a lot of them being, you know, some of them are 2D, but they still look really beautiful. And then some of them are 2D and they don't look really beautiful. And at this point, I don't think there's much of an excuse. Like, I think that visuals are important. You know, a lot of people say graphics don't matter. That's a very odd thing for me. I mean, saying graphics don't matter to me is the equivalent of saying that, like, writing prose does not matter. Like, if you're saying the aesthetic doesn't matter, then you might say that, you know, the way Lovecraft, the adjectives he uses and the way he structures his sentences and all that doesn't matter. All that matters is plot. But if you take, I mean, some authors, if you strip them of their aesthetic, there's not much left of the stories themselves. So I think aesthetic is huge. And certainly some games capitalize on their aesthetic more than others. Like when, for instance, Killzone 3 came out, the art for Killzone 3 is utterly amazing. It's very impressive. But then the game itself, you know, it's kind of just an arena for shooting dudes in the face, which is fine and it's good and dandy and that's all wonderful. But when you have a beautiful world, if you're going around shooting people in it and that's the core mechanic of the game, which is a lovely mechanic and there's so many things we can do with that, It doesn't necessarily require, like, you know, when you're playing Battlefield or whatever, you know, the aesthetic is very beautiful, but it doesn't really matter that much. But there are some games that really use their aesthetic very heavily and they rely on it. And eShade is certainly one of those games. And to answer your question at the end there about any, like, obstacles I've been facing with this, you know, it doesn't feel that different. And I always ask myself, like, why does it take so many people to make these big games? And I say that having been on two very large teams, like, I ask myself, like, what was I doing all the time? Like, how is it possible that I made eShade in 3 years, and what did I do in 3 years at AAA Game? I mean, I was working every day, but I don't know. I just feel like I've gotten so much more mileage for the work I've put in on the indie game. So in terms of the actual production and making the environments and all that, it feels pretty similar, and it feels like I'm working about the same amount and everything. I don't know. You make, like, a couple tree variants and a couple bush variants and a couple rocks, and you make a terrain, and you already have a forest. So I don't know. I don't know why it takes so many people at the big studios.
You make it sound so simple. I guarantee if myself and Kim attempted this, it wouldn't look like this. We attempted on our first episode to do Yarnies from the character from Unravel, and while Kim's worked out well, we won't even go into what mine turned out like. So God knows what it'd be like if we tried to do video games, but all the more power to you if you can make it so simple to yourself to do.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that I agree completely. I was just like, you were saying a few rocks, and I'm like, I can't even put up a good banner, you know? Our banner is thanks to our editor back in our home base that does all of our, like, visuals. Like, me and Elwood don't have those skills, and for us to even think about this, like, you're talking about, oh, make a few rocks. I'm like, how would I even draw a rock on the computer? Let me think about that first, and then we'll talk. So, I mean, eShade is about the art. It's about an artist, and I've seen the trailer, and it shows that you capture pictures of, like, paintings. Mm-hmm. And so that's the idea I kind of get of it. So is there a bigger story behind it? Is there, like, are you looking at it as, like, a like an open world, like normal open world games where you'd be, like, you'd have a main storyline and then, like, other things that you need to accomplish or something like that?
In eShade, there is no overarching central story, like, and that's kind of strange, I suppose. There's no, like, it's not like you're on eShade and you have amnesia and you're trying to figure out your history or anything like that, or, you know, the island is at risk and you need to save it. It really is, like, almost like I've described it to people before as, like, a travel simulator. Like, it's a place, first and foremost. Like, we're trying to build a place, and you can come and visit there. And the interesting part of eShade is kind of similar to the interesting part of traveling to a new place in real life. It's like, why do you go to Berlin, you know, to taste the food, to meet the people, to walk at the streets at night and hear music and go to museums and things like, I mean, obviously everyone travels for different reasons, but at the end of the day, you know, you're going to experience a new thing. And that's an enriching experience for most humans. And that's what we're trying to do. It's just a really neat place that you can go and the world gives you feedback for the choices you make. So, like, you can talk to people and make dialogue decisions, and the things you say to them will affect what kind of information you get back from them, and it'll also affect, in some cases, who they're friends with in the world. So you can make kind of an impact on people's lives. And then with the painting thing, so... Okay, I'll give a little story about how the idea for eShade came to me at the beginning. I was trying to think about what is the driving force behind an RPG. Like, what is gripping you? What is making you, like, want to move forward and progress? And I eventually distilled it down to just, well, you master enemies who drop loot, and the loot is just stuff that will help you master bigger enemies. I mean, that's fairly simply the core loop. So I thought, well, why can't we make a core loop about anything? We can make a core loop about cupcakes. You bake cupcakes, you get some feedback for how well done your cupcakes are, and you get more stuff for baking bigger and cooler and better cupcakes. I think that could be an amazing game if someone took the time to, you know, hone it and figure it all out. So in our world, the core loop is exploration itself. It's like you're exploring, you're going to new places, and when you go to new places, somehow, some way, you get rewards that will help you go to more new places. And at the time I thought of that, that sounded so simple and so elegant to me. And now looking back, I can see how green I was as a designer, because that's essentially an adventure game. I mean, like even like a point and click adventure, that's what you're doing. You're exploring, you find stuff that enables you to get to new places, and that's exciting and that's fun. And then when you get to those new places, you find more stuff that'll help you get to new places. So in our case, tied in with the exploration. As you explore, you find new people to talk to, and they give you new quests. And the quests are coincidentally often about painting something, like painting a certain place, painting a certain animal, painting a certain thing at a certain time of day. And they're not always explicit about what exactly needs to be painted. They might just drop hints about the kinds of things they like. And part of the fun of the game is paying attention to the world you're in, and paying attention to the people you talk to, and then you'll start to see like, oh, you know, that lady over there wanted, you know, this kind of flower that's this certain color, and I see it right here, and I'm going to paint it, and I'm going to go see if she likes it. And if she does, then she might offer you some information about a new item that you can get that will help you surmount some future impasse. So that's kind of the core loop of the game.
It's interesting that we're seeing the rise of these so-called walking simulators. You mentioned already Firewatch. We also had things, games such as Everybody's Gone to the Rapture. And it's almost as though gamers themselves are evolving, so we no longer need to have something constantly there to keep us going. The fact that we can just enjoy the exploration of a world. And I think that for myself, I feel that this has really sort of stemmed out the sandbox games, when you have things such as like Skyrim, GTA, where people are going away, they're ignoring the actual mission things and just enjoying getting lost in the world and having trekking holidays in like Vice City, or going off on a wilderness ramble in like the world of Skyrim. And the fact that we've now obviously got developers, mainly on the independent scene, doing things like Firewatch and Everybody's Gone to Rapture, which just focus purely on that. And then obviously, as you said, with your game, it's about collecting art, which again is another very underused sort of concept. I mean, just obviously going back and forth with Kim, and obviously the examples we can think of, I mean, you obviously have things such as like Layers of Fear and Okami, which obviously had its calligraphy mechanic in there. So it's kind of unusual to see art in there, especially art that's not got some sort of photo basis to it, such as like a very layman example being Pokemon Snap. So it's interesting to obviously see this art being like what you've chosen to use as the forefront of the game. And I mean, what was the sort of inspiration for wanting to use art in this way? Or was it just sort of like the best way to sort of utilize these environments you've been creating?
So something I should be honest about right away is I think it is kind of like Pokemon Snap. And some people when they heard a painting game, they thought, oh, it's going to be like you paint stuff like Photoshop or something. And it's not that. And then when they see like the painting just materializes in front of you, some people have been a little bit disappointed about that. Like, oh, it's just like a screenshot. It is kind of like a screenshot. We're not trying to like obscure that in any way. It's not really a game about painting. I mean, it is more like photography. It's not like you're not learning to draw, or you don't have to be able to draw to play this game. And then in terms of why we did that sort of painting mechanic, well, my girlfriend helps me a lot with the design. She plays a lot of games too. And we always talk about this stuff. And we were talking one day, like, so we have these beautiful environments. Like, how can we really capitalize on the stuff that you're seeing? It's like that same thing I was talking about before with Killzone. You have a beautiful place, but why? You're just, I mean, it could be any place. You're just, there's dudes in it and you shoot them. And, you know, how can we make the environment actually be part of the game mechanically? And she actually came up with this idea of just, well, what if you play as a painter and you have to paint the environment and you have to paint certain things at certain times? Then the more you pay attention to the world, the more you excel at the game mechanically. So the painting thing was our attempt to try to capitalize on the stuff that you're seeing as best we can.
East Shade is a sounds like it's going to be really cool, actually.
Well, thank you.
I mean, I love the idea of, you know, the art and the open world and just the fact, like, I'm a person, I'm pretty calm with games. I don't go for Killzone, and I'm really bad at these FPS games.
Me too.
So I like walking simulators. I actually think the increase of them is really nice because it makes you kind of notice the surroundings and really capture atmosphere, which a lot of games now I feel, especially indie games that are done, especially those done hastily or seem like they're done hastily, tend to forget that atmosphere is very important. So you're now making a shorter game, and that's the one that's going to release soon, and that's Leaving Lindau. Is that what you call it? Is that how you say
yep,
it?
Yep, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So Leaving Lindau is, as I saw on your page, it was a short first-person exploration adventure game. So how did you come to decide to make make a game, like a shorter game, just using the East Shade environment, like the universe?
So the way we came to that, there's kind of two reasons for it, or I should say two groups of reasons. The first was more like business reasons, I guess you could say, or practical reasons. East Shade, I mean, East Shade Studios has never shipped a game. I've never shipped a game, and it's very terrifying for a lot of reasons. Especially with all the logistics of launching. And I didn't want to I really didn't want to mess anything up for like a stupid reason. Like if I had just done it before, I would have known that, you know, you're not supposed to release a day on Sunday or whatever dumb stuff that you can accidentally do because you've never shipped a game. It would just kill me, especially because, you know, I've been working on East Shade for 3 years now, and all my life savings and everything I put in, I just really wanted to make sure I wasn't going to screw that up, or I wanted to come into it as prepared as I could possibly be. And I knew that the only way to do that was to either go with a publisher who knows what they're doing. And we considered that option for a long time. But at the end of the day, I just wanted to try this ourselves first. And then the other option would be to actually release a game first. So I had always kind of like been simmering different ideas, like how can I make something small that we can try to put out. And then one day I played a game called Home is Where One Starts. It's like 20 minutes long. It's this really short game, and it's kind of Gone Home-ish. So it is like a walking simulator. And I played it, and I just really liked, I liked the game, and I liked the format, because I'd never played a game that was 20 minutes long. I was like, wow, that was like a video game cup of coffee or something. Like, you just, it's really cheap, and you just play it and you enjoy it, and then it's done, and you can kind of think about it for, you know, a few hours or whatever. Yeah. So I really liked that format, and I hadn't played many games, and I wanted more games like that, and that seemed to fit in perfectly. I was really inspired, like, oh, I could make a game like that. So that gets into the second group of reasons, which are just artistic reasons. I thought it would be a cool game to make, and you know, some people have been waiting for East Shade for a long time, and I wanted a way to invite people into the world right now without doing early access. And the reason I didn't want to do early access is because East Shade is a very content-oriented game. It's not like a systemic game. It's not like you're going to, you know, pour 100 hours into it, you know, playing matches or anything like that. So I think content-based games that you kind of use them up, and once you play them, you know, you kind of know things, and you wouldn't necessarily go back to them. I mean, you can go back to them, but, you know, you've spoiled things about the story and whatnot. I think that early access is kind of a bad choice for that, for reasons I'm sure are fairly obvious. You know, you spoil things that are unpolished and work in progress, and then your most passionate fans are like, yeah, early access, so I can buy it now and I can play it, and then they get the crappiest version of the game, you know, and that's kind of sad, and they might not come back to it. I mean, I've done that with games. Like, I've been so excited to get my hands on games, I play the early access, and it's buggy and not as good as it could be, and it will be good, but I'm not going to come back and play it after I've already poured, like, you know, 20 hours into it or whatever. So I didn't want that to happen. So that's our reasons for doing Leaving Lindau.
That's fine. I mean, obviously, this is sort of the first entry point into this this Ishio universe. I mean, do you have any sort of plans to expand on it through future games and like explore different areas of this world that you've created?
I have Ishio, like the island, and that kind of is a lot of parts are fleshed out and some parts are skeletons at the moment. And Leaving Lindau takes place on that island in certain areas of that island, though at different times. Ishade takes place about 80 years after Leaving Lindau, so the places look very different, and like one town in particular is like still being built in Leaving Lindau, whereas it's totally finished in Ishade.
That's nice.
Yeah, so you'll get a chance. Hopefully it'll be cool for people, because they'll be Leaving Lindau is fairly linear to, some people might call it like a tube game, which I don't mean to sound reductive about it, but that's just what it is. You can't like leave, there's areas you walk, you can't leave them necessarily. And then in Ishade, hopefully you'll be able to recognize, oh, this is, you know, the area from Leaving Lindau, but now I can just go over there to that cool whatever I saw in the distance, and that'll be neat. As far as games beyond Ishade and Leaving Lindau, I'm certainly not tired of the Ishade universe. I don't know what I'm going to do after Ishade. I tell my girlfriend that, like, if I die in a car accident, just please let it be after I ship Ishade. Then I'll be fine. It's like, okay. So that's how focused my, how one-track minded I am about this. So I don't know what to do after that.
Is it a fairly simple, so I'm guessing since this is linear, there is also a storyline attached to it, and that how long would you expect this game to, is this game supposed to be?
Yeah, so I should mention that, because when I was talking about Ishade, I should say Leaving Lindau is mechanically almost opposite from Ishade in terms of our design philosophies and everything. Whereas Ishade is, of course, open world, go where you want, do what you want. You're kind of a blank slate. Your avatar is not meant to be any person in particular. Leaving Lindau is a very specific story. You're Clara, and you're leaving today on this, you're leaving on a boat on this adventure. And you kind of unveil her story throughout the game. So in terms of length, our beta testers are telling us about an hour to finish it. So something like that. That's why I call it a one-sitting game. And the price will reflect that as well.
It's a reasonable length. I mean, most people technically would sit down for about an hour. Or even if you were going to stream for one-shots, 1 hour seems like a pretty good time.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so Ishade and Leaving Lindau are very opposites, but for both of them, when you started this, were you targeting any specific audience?
Didn't really think about it. I mean, I kind of just have been making stuff that I think is rad. probably a terrible idea, because since I'm trying to make a living off this, but I don't know. I think that I'm hoping some people will dig it. I don't know anyone in particular, though. I don't have a specific person in mind who would definitely love this type of game. I mean, maybe people like you and I, Kim, who are, you know, more chill and want to, you know, explore and take it slow and not worry about getting shot, I guess.
Yeah, but I mean, seeing as walking simulators are pretty big nowadays, you know, like we have Everybody's Gone to the Rapture, which is going to be our featured game for this month. You know, just games like, you know, obviously, Layers of Fear has a little bit more depth to it, but it is, in general, pretty much a walking simulator. It just has a horror aspect to it. But then you have a ton of games like that, you know, that carry this sort of feeling where, you know, where it's just, you know, just achieving certain objectives. And I feel like there is a world to do this. And, like, I feel like there is an audience for it right now. I don't know who the audience is, but it would be people who like this, because obviously there are many games that have succeeded at doing that. Just look at Gone Home. Gone Home is very, 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 very tame, but it's just the story itself in the background that, you know, the mystery of it all that
for sure
really carries it. Yeah, I mean, Gone Home is a spectacular game. I really like that game a lot. So I guess we should talk about, do you have an expected shipping date for Ishade, or is it still in development? You still have you gone into alpha or beta or anything right now? Like,
I have a vertical slice of Ishade that I had been testing for a while before I moved on to Leaving Lindau. And most of the game is like skeletoned right now. In terms of estimates, I I don't know. Right now I'm thinking like early 2018, but that's totally, that's just my guess. I tend not to worry too much about giving estimates since it's not exactly like people are, you know, climbing over each other to find out sweet new Ishade information at the moment. It's not like I'm not Bungie or anything. No. You know, something interesting about the title Walking Simulator, I know that some people use it in a derogatory way. I think it's perfectly fine. I mean, that's I know what kinds of games people are talking about when they say that, and I like those kinds of games. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But a lot of games are lumped into that simply by not having guns in them. It's very interesting. Like, people call The Witness a walking simulator. And to me, that's like one of the gamiest game. Like, if talk about a game with a very mechanical loop, you know, that it's not about walking. Like, it's some serious puzzles and mechanics in there. And when you say walking simulator, like, I'm thinking like, oh, well, you're doing a lot of walking, you know, it's light mechanically. And then the Talos Principle also, people call that a walking simulator. And that's like, what? Are you serious? That's like, that's Portal. I mean, then Portal's a walking simulator too. So people use that term pretty liberally. I'm not accusing you guys of doing that. I think it's fine, but it's interesting.
It's weird the Portal
simply being with simply not having guns or swords is like so peculiar that like it all fits into one genre, you know? Sorry, I didn't mean to talk over you.
No, that's fine. It's just I was just shocked that people would describe Portal as being a walking simulator, and it's to myself, I would say it's a puzzle game. It's you're going around solving puzzles. The idea of a walking simulator, I always felt there was you're going places, you're finding trinkets, you're essentially going shiny hunting. So like you have with like Fallout, except that you obviously haven't got the way of people trying to shoot you or maim you every 5 minutes. So they kind of like feel like this evolution of the Metroidvania sort of games. When we look at things such as like Song of the Deep, if Song of the Deep didn't have any sort of bad guys in it, it would essentially be what walking games are. Just this joy of exploration, of finding things, and just enjoying being surrounded in a world. And I think this is just the evolution of gamers as a whole. We're no longer just these... Gaming on a whole, we seem to have become this higher class level of people we're viewed as. We're no longer just the nerdy kids who just want to shoot things and look at big boobed sprites no more. We can play different sort of games. We don't only have to play the same sort of game. We can have games like this, and this is what I love about the independent game, that we never know what to have. And just to obviously come back to yourself, what you were saying about not having an intended audience, it makes me think back to the documentary Indie Game the Movie, and when you look at the games featured there, like Super Meat Boy, Braid, and Fez, these are free games where the creators obviously made them because they've had this vision, but you couldn't say who the audience for those games are going to be. I mean, Super Meat Boy, this is a game that beats you down. I mean, Dark Souls is a game that's designed to beat you down, but there's this massive audience for these games.
Yeah.
Again, we got Braid built around a rewind mechanic, and it's very interesting art style, but you would never be able to say who this game's for. You wouldn't think it would have this mass market appeal, and I think it's always interesting when we see developers out there like yourself that are out there taking risks, trying to do something different and push the gaming world forward. So I'm excited to obviously see where this goes, and I can only hope that people embrace this game. I mean, I'm excited from the footage we've seen, so to actually have hands on with this game is something I'm certainly looking forward to, and I'm hoping that everyone else is in the same camp as ourselves with us and is excited by what they're obviously seeing on this video here.
The nice part is, since it's such a small team, I don't need to make, you know, I don't need to sell 300,000 copies to make another game, which is cool.
Yeah.
So obviously, Denny, if we were to, if people listening to the show or watching the show would like to find you, what would be the best way to find information on Ishade or yourself or the company?
Well, you can go to eastshade.com. That's just east, like the direction, and shade, like the word, like from a tree, shade. Or you can find me on Twitter, at eastshade. It's my handle.
So thank you so much for being on the show and having a talk and telling us about Ishade and the universe and all the amazing things that we are looking forward to right now.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, and Leaving Lindau is supposed to be released soon, right? In February.
February 8th, yeah.
February 8th. And where would we be able to find that?
It'll be on Steam and itch.io at the very least.
And this wraps up this episode. Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please like, share, and subscribe. Head over to our home base, thatmomentin.com, to read our game reviews. To get gaming news and releases every single day, follow us on Twitter and like us on Facebook at GameWarp Podcast. And hang out with us over at twitch.tv/GameWarp Podcast to watch our streams. And finally, to listen to us on the go, you can find us on iTunes and Podomatic. Thanks so much, and we'll see you in the next episode. Bye!